Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to a special Tuesday night edition of The Next Round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. We just want to make it clear, moving forward, all the way till about Labor Day night when the Pigskin gets teed up once again, our usual start time will be 8 p.m. Eastern on a Monday night. So with that said, let's proceed with tonight's show. Gabriel Montoya, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm, feeling a little better than Bermaine Stavern, but I'm doing okay. How you doing, man? Happy Monday.
I'm doing well. Folks, if you want to call in, we'll open up the phone lines in about 20 minutes. Those digits, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. It was showtime. It was a triple header of action for the WBC heavyweight title. And the new, it's the Bomb Squad, Deontay Wilder, the 12-round decision over Bermaine Stavern. And for the WBC junior featherweight title, Leo Santa Cruz, he takes batting practice on Jesus Ruiz, stopping him in eight. And in a battle of young junior welterweights, it is Amir Imam in a back-and-forth shootout, simply outgunning the game, Fidel Maldonado, stopping him in the sixth round. Gabe, Deontay Wilder, was this fight more about what he was or what Bermaine Stavern ended up not being?
I think you can only fight the guy in front of you. And I think Bermaine did it himself with a title, a disservice on a lot of levels, but mainly coming out with the excuses. Lose like a man. If you weren't in shape, you weren't ready to go, keep it to yourself because it's your problem, not no one else's. I thought Deontay Wilder ushered in the next American heavyweight era, however long that lasts, but he also kind of is ushering in the next Lennox Lewis era. He's going to box. He's going to throw right hands. Be a little more aggressive than Lennox was. I think that's his nature. But I think this is about who he is. And we talked about it last week about is there a scenario where he could grow up before our eyes and show us that he's got a little bit more than we're all thinking. I guess that's the one that came through. I mean, I really felt that if it went decision, he would be the one to get the nod just based on styles and the way he's more active. But I thought it was a nice performance. I thought it was as good a, coming off party as you could get. I wish Stavern had been more prepared. He might have gotten something a little different.
More on that later. I agree with you. The one thing that impressed me about Deontay Wilder was last week we spoke about this, and for many other fights before leading in to his 33rd professional battle. Staying power, durability, and consistency. And there came a point where we said, if this fight goes into the middle rounds and he had to go into intermediate to deep waters, would he get drowned? And quite frankly, that did not happen. And he had a steady jab. If it wasn't always forceful, it was at least very persistent. And he showed he can hurt even a solid heavyweight like Bermaine Stavern, which he did several times with the right hand. He's athletic, and he's still on a very sharp learning curve. He seems to be very passionate, and he's athletic, and he's got a very good teacher in Mark Breland. So I think this was a perfectly executed game plan in many respects. It is ironic, though, Gabe, isn't it? The knock on Golden Boy for all these years is they don't know how to develop a fighter from 0-0 to being a world title. Well, they do it with Deontay Wilder, and guess what, Gabe? He's no longer theirs after this particular night.
It's just kind of sad, and I think, I tweeted this out, and I really believe this, this really, it'd be hard to find greater evidence that Richard Schaefer wasn't serving Golden Boy's best interest by having someone that was moving that close to a shot at the heavyweight title, that looked like he had the goods, that could have the goods for the next 10-15 years if they're smart with him. There's no bigger franchise than the heavyweight title. And they didn't re-sign him to Golden Boy? This is his last fight? How is that even possible? The suit's been settled, but I think the aftermath says it all. It's really a shame, you know. And, you know, the thing I really liked, too, about the performance, though, to jump back to just performance level stuff, his technique didn't fall all apart as he tired. He learned how to manage his exhaustion. That was something I was not expecting from Deontay Wilder. I thought he'd get knocked out once he got tired.
Gabe, if we look at the heavyweight landscape, and, well, if you listen to the Showtime broadcast, Deontay Wilder is the undisputed, unquestioned heavyweight champion of the world because, quite frankly, in that universe, which is Heyman, Showtime, perhaps NBC, maybe Vladimir Klitschko really doesn't exist. But I think for all intents and purposes, the guy who's on top, or whatever that means, however important you take that claim, is Klitschko. With that said, where do you rank Deontay Wilder within the heavyweight hierarchy? Is he somewhere in the top 10, or has he clearly established himself, in your view, Gabe, as the second best big man on the planet?
I think it's going to take time for us to really believe that he's the second best big man on the planet. But I think that's where he belongs right now. Brian Jennings needs to show something instead of sitting on the bench waiting for the best opportunity. Alexander Povetkin has gotten up there and failed miserably. Andy Ruiz needs to decide if he's going to be in shape or not. He hasn't really beaten anybody. Tyson Fury talks a good game, and he might be maybe that 2A guy, but he hasn't attained a belt for whatever reason. So I think it's fair to say that Deontay's right there with Tyson vying for that second spot. But, you know, he's the one that got the belt, and he beat a legit dude in Bermain Stiverne in order to get it. So I would say, yeah, he's the second best guy with a lot of upside. A lot of upside.
You know, the one thing I like about Deontay Wilder, and putting aside the fact he's American, I think that's a little bit overrated given the fact that the Latin presence and the Latin influence on this business is so big. It's no longer 1980. The demographics have changed within who is actually supporting and driving and who is the foundational fan base of this particular sport in North America. What I like about Deontay Wilder is he's exciting, he's athletic, and he's colorful. And that's the one thing that's been missing from the heavyweight division during the reign of the Klitschkos, and not necessarily their fault. Their personality or Vladimir's personality is what it is. But he's fun, he's charismatic, and he's colorful. And I think he breathes some life into this division. Going to Stiverne. Now, Stiverne put out a big press release. They had this press conference that literally one person attended. Basically, it was an excuse-making session saying that my dog ate my homework and that we were dehydrated, and that's why we perform so lethargically. Now, all that may have been true because he didn't necessarily, Gabe, look like the same guy that we had seen against Chris Areola. Of course, you can make the argument Deontay Wilder brings a different equation than Chris Areola. But what bothers me is I've been told by some very good sources a couple of things. Bermain Stiverne came into this camp at nearly close to 290 pounds. He also spent all week in the sauna last week leading into this bout, so he definitely tried to crash his way down to a certain weight. Third of all, Ken Miller today, when we taped the 10 count out in Santa Monica, flat out said on the record that Bermain Stiverne, as of a couple weeks ago, was, in his own words, quote, making it rain with Floyd Mayweather at the strip clubs. So when it's all said and done, this is on you, Bermain. You had possession of one of the most important titles in all of sports still, and you just didn't give a damn.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. You know, they always say it's harder to keep the title than to get the title. And whatever we said about Deontay, whatever doubts that we had, the bottom line is that he showed up hungrier and in better shape, better prepared. And, you know, that is bringing up Mark Breland, JD's. Those are real, you know, people focus on the Heyman, myself included. But those are legit boxing people that have slowly put this guy together. Russ Amber has been part of that brain trust as well, and somebody that is respected. I think, you know, they've done the work in the gym, and it's starting to show. And if Bermain had a chance to beat Deontay Wilder, this was probably it. I mean, maybe he can show up in better shape later on, but this is what I don't understand. Like, let's say I'm a nuclear physicist. I don't just decide to, like, start doing math poorly, and I know I'm doing math poorly, but I'm just going to keep doing it, and at the last second, I'm going to try to turn it around. Like, probably not going to get a lot of work as a nuclear physicist, and that's how I operate. So why is it that a professional athlete who holds one of the most coveted titles in all of sports dehydrated and doesn't know what shape his body's in? I tend to believe what everything that you're saying, Steve. And that was before this fight was announced. I remember, you know, there was all that kind of gray area whether it was going to happen. But the thing that I noticed the most and I worried about with Stravern is I kept seeing a lot more pictures of him with people and at places other than the gym or with other fighters in training. And that was like, well, you know, Buster Douglas, if you didn't learn from him, you beat up the baddest man on the planet and then you just get fat as hell and lose the title terribly. Then you haven't learned anything. You didn't learn your history. And there's nobody to blame but himself because he had a legit shot to win and everybody picked him. And
he's 36 years old. 99% of his market value, because he's not a ticket seller, he's not an attraction, is based on having the belt. You're with Don King, who simply does not have the juice anymore. So you better guard that title as if it's your life. And the bottom line is, anytime a fighter comes out of shape, especially if you don't have another job, because some of these guys do work side gigs, there is no excuse to not to go to your office, which is the gym, on a consistent basis. And I was also told by the same source that Romain Stavern had an opportunity to fight in September, some sort of a stay-busy tune-up fight in between all the time of the machinations of the WBC mandatory and Al Haymon delaying things. He chose not to do it. So based on that, you don't get to cry or try to finagle your way to a rematch. In the words of Bill Belichick, one of his mantras, you had one job. And quite frankly, you didn't want to do it. Gabe, Leo Santa Cruz is now officially monotonous. Now, if he never fights Rigondeaux, I can understand why. It's a terrible fight. It's not good for him. But he needs to start fighting real guys. And maybe Abner Mares in April or May is that remedy. But I have to tell you, as of a year ago, I was one of his biggest advocates. I was one of his biggest fans. I look forward to his fight. But, Gabe, I was with a group of people on Saturday night, and basically all of us, in one word, were bored.
Yeah, I've been bored by him for a while. And you know, I enjoyed him early on, and then I kept noticing, wow, he doesn't really fight anybody. And, you know, and to be fair, you know, I don't think the Rigo fight is a terrible fight. I think it's a terrible fight for Leo Santa Cruz. I think Rigo could be pushed into some action, but I don't think anybody wants any part of that action. But that's, you know, another conversation. I think with Leo, I just don't – for one, I thought the fight ended a little abruptly, and maybe I'm crazy, but I didn't feel like the guy was all that hurt, and he'd been doing so well to that point. You know, it was a tight fight, but he was in it. For them to kind of just pull it like that, I thought was a little strange. I thought it was a little premature.
Gabe, they did us a favor because it was monotonous.
Well, it was terrible.
I wanted the main event to start, and so did my friends at this particular house we were all at. I believe there was a right hand over the top that noticeably hurt Jesus Ruiz. He was also down, I think, had to be at least, what, 5-2 or 7-1. So at that point, we know the fight's going to go one way. Jesus Ruiz was chosen for a reason. He was basically a no-hoper with a decent-looking record. I didn't necessarily have a problem with that stoppage. Now, if it was 4-4 in rounds or something like 5-3 where it was really competitive, I believe the competitive aspect of that fight had slipped about 2-3 rounds ago, and it was all going to be one-way traffic. Gabe, Amir Imam, this could be Don King's last hope at any relevancy. And I don't know if there's really a business with Amir Imam, but I'll say this. This is a slick, well-schooled puncher. I really enjoy what he does in that ring.
I don't think there's any hope for Don King to have any relevance anymore. And I would be surprised if his people don't get swooped on. I think why a guy like Amir Imam hasn't been swooped on by the likes of Al Haymon is probably because the contract with Don King is so convoluted that it'd probably be really hard to get out of. That's just a wild guess. But this kid, this could be love. He gets knocked down, he gets up, he knocks people out. And boy, I mean, Fidel Maldonado, you know, he looked like he got shot from distance. But every time he went down, it was like kind of a delayed reaction, and then he just go flailing all over the place. It was like,
Gabe,
like American Sniper.
He didn't just go down. He reacted as if he was electrocuted. I mean, he had gyrations. It kind of reminded me of the interception touchdown dance of Merton Hanks, the old chicken dance. If getting knocked down were like an Olympic sport and it was judged, two of those knockdowns, he at least got a 9.5 or a 10. And it goes to show you how powerful and sneaky Amir Imam is, because those right hands came right over the top, and I don't think Fidel Maldonado saw at least two of those right hands that sent him on the canvas.
Yeah, seriously, it was the classic. He just walked right into things or leapt right into them. And I just, you know, what I like about Amir Imam is that he can be a little of both. He can be touched. I think that's more about his tendency to want to bang. But he can box and he can destroy. He can counterpunch. He's got some variety to his game. I think there's room to grow. But, you know, just looking at it, it was kind of a physical mismatch. He was just the bigger man, you know, 5'10 to 5'7. And he just seemed in a different weight class on some level, because I thought Maldonado was doing a good job. He just, when he got touched, he got shot. He got tased. I want to see more of this kid. And I think the sky's the limit. I mean, I think the chin might be an issue, but that could be a matter of just, you know, not stepping off the line after you're done firing, you know. He sticks around for the receipt a little bit too much, but he's must-see TV as far as I'm concerned.
Gabe, moving on here, NBC made the big announcement alongside Al Haymon, Premier Champion Boxing, March 7th on NBC. Robert Guerrero will take on Keith Thurman. Adrian Broner will take on John Molina. Then April 11th for the 143-pound title of the world, Lamont Peterson will take on Danny Garcia. Gabe, give me some of your initial thoughts. I know a lot of people have weighed in on this. Is Al Haymon now the savior of boxing?
Well, I don't know if he's going to save it, but he certainly, I think, in position to be the most powerful guy in the sport, which is, I think, what he wants. Everybody else's stables are getting old, or they're a little bit too young to kind of take over. He's poised with this Olympic class, particularly, I think, someone like Errol Spence is going to be a star. Now Deontay Wilder, who's the heavyweight champion of the world, as far as everybody that doesn't follow boxing knows. I don't know if it's a dark day or a light day. I mean, just running down some of the things, like, you know, bringing up the drug testing, and they use the old phrase, you know, random Olympic-style testing, which doesn't mean anything at all. One, Olympic testing's weak. To do it in Olympic style, it's like, well, that can't be any better, could it? And there's no such thing as random within the testing, because, you tell them on the whereabouts form what hour you want them to come within a 24-hour cycle. So you kind of know sort of when they're going to come, just not what day. And we don't know if the commissions are involved in that program. So I did find it strange. I don't know how you felt about this, that John McCain comes out, one of the co-authors of the Ali Act, which put up that firewall between the manager and the promoter to protect the fighter, came out and basically endorsed this whole union. When basically this guy has been accused of pulling the teeth out of the Ali Act, like, you know, one tooth at a time, one fighter at a time. I found that very curious. But, you know, they're rolling out all their bells and whistles. You know, Dave brought this up from Leaving in the Ring, that Al has essentially done this the whole time, kind of bought out a market. You know, Kathy Duva, while she didn't get on, like, NBC proper, she did get on NBC and paved the way for prize fighting to kind of get back in the door. Al sees that this works, lets her kind of develop people, comes in, buys out the whole market, buys out, you know, regular NBC dates. And then, you know, the immediate pass, as Dave pointed out, he's like, look what he did to the competition. He absolutely wrecked HBO and Showtime, kind of tested the waters at CBS, and then just left everybody in their wake and became pretty powerful competition. So, you know, to just jump back around to my initial statement, I think Al's poised to become the most powerful guy in boxing if he isn't already.
Yeah, I've been told that this is just part of the plan. This is not just about NBC, that he's going to be buying other networks' time. This is a time buy, and he's basically going to try to force a monopoly / league, and in effect be the Dana White of boxing. And I think there comes even to a point where he may not even need the sanctioning bodies, and in essence create his own league. There's a reason why he has over 150 boxers on his roster, and every other day or so he is adding to that expensive list of fighters that he has. So it'll be very interesting. But I give him credit, though. early on, I think he's putting on some very attractive matchups. But two questions. Number one is sustainability. And number two, did this basically add to the fractured nature of the business? Because when it's all said and done, Top Rank and Golden Boy can make good fights within their own side of the fence. So can Al Haymon. But there's going to come a point in time when there's going to be another version of Pacquiao Mayweather. And people are going to say, well, that fight can't be made because one guy is with NBC and the other guy is with HBO or some other entity. And I think that ultimately will still be a very big issue in boxing. Gabe, before we hit the phone lines, at about 45 past the hour, we'll take a look at the HBO doubleheader from Denver, Colorado at the First Bank Center. Are you prepared from Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, the rematch? Because it looks like to me, and this much is clear, Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy pulled their offer for the Canelo-Cotto fight on Saturday. Now speculation is running rampant, and I've heard the rumors, been told certain things. It looks like it very well could be Mayweather-Cotto in a rematch at 154.5 pounds. Forget this, the middleweight championship of the world, as Floyd Mayweather tries to do his version, the modern-day version, of Henry Armstrong by holding three major weight class belts at the same time.
Am I ready for it? I mean, I think I'm prepared for Floyd to disappoint me as always. He never really gives us the fight we want, right? Not since Margarito. You know, that I think right there when he left Top Rank, I stopped getting the Floyd fights I'd wanted. Even before that, I wasn't really getting them, but it was like, well, he's trying to find his feet within 140 to 147, and then I'll get him. And that used to be the cry of the Mayweather sympathizer, was, you know, the Mayweather apologist. Just wait until he gets done with this fight and solidifies himself with Oscar. You know, like he even told Margarito, then I'll fight you. It's never happened. So this makes sense. I think that, you know, people say his legacy is getting ruined by not fighting Pacquiao, but I think when he does these catchweight deals, you know, making Canelo come down 2 pounds, and now they're going to do this at, you know, 154.5. I think his legacy gets cemented, and it's certainly nowhere near Sugar Ray Robinson or the best ever. You know, we cite the Joey Maxim light heavyweight fight where he weighed, what, 158, something like that? And,
you know,
Maxim got to 170.
Here's the harsh reality about Floyd and his legacy and his reputation with the fans or what they think. He doesn't care. He's the most bottom-line mercenary in the sport, and quite frankly, there's nothing wrong with that. But this is a huge buzzkill for boxing fans, because Doug Fisher said it best. The one fight that I was really looking forward to in the first half of 2015 was Canelo Cotto. You give me any other versions of fights involving those guys, he doesn't want to be there, and quite frankly, I see his point. Let's get to some tweets before we hit the phone line from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. How do you guys see the whole Wilder-Haymon-NBC-Showtime-WBC entanglements playing out? Seems a no-brainer, Wilder on NBC. Gabe, here's what I think. You have a heavyweight belt holder, and if you have the largest platform, there's a large base, a large segment of our population that'll watch NBC just because of how many viewers they have. They don't know or care about Vladimir Klitschko. And you can absolutely say, hey, this is the heavyweight champion of the world on NBC. And you know what, Gabe? They'd buy it hook, line, and sinker.
That's all we've been waiting for is an American heavyweight. I mean, anybody that is kind of on the fringes, they always ask, you know, I haven't watched since Tyson, and, you know, who's the next big heavyweight, you know, American? Those Klitschkos are boring, or, you know, they don't even know their names. I think this is a, you know, super valuable franchise, and you've got to put them on NBC, the biggest, you know, market possible. And then you move them back towards Showtime pay-per-view. You know, I wonder how long it's going to take to get into pay-per-view. That's what's going to be interesting. But you don't have to deal with the Klitschkos at all in this day and age. And I think Al, you know, I think he understands that kind of P.T. Barnum style of promoting, and that if you say it, it's so, then it's so. If you say something's a hit, it's a hit. And if they keep marketing him as the heavyweight champion of the world, and, you know, that broadcast, it didn't really lay out the storyline that it needs to be unified or anything and that anybody else exists. You know, so right there from his very inauguration, Deontay Wilder is the Haymon championship heavyweight champion of the world. And that's the way it's going to be. You know, I think that's I think it's the beginnings of it. What's going to be interesting, though, is that as we head down the UFC occasion of boxing that Heyman's going to be doing, that's what I think he's going to be doing. All these guys that are acting like they're going to be the ones committed to a star, we're in for a big surprise when about 3 years from now they're all grinding it out against each other in, you know, rematches or trilogies. And, you know, they're making good money, but none of them ever became like that singular pay-per-view star. The premier boxing will be the pay-per-view that everybody be, you know, brand that everybody will be buying. That's my take.
Here's a tweet from Aaron Brown. Did you guys find it ironic that Showtime did not mention Vlad Klitschko the entire broadcast? I don't find it ironic. Gabe, I find it expected.
Yeah, they're creating a whole new universe, and it's, you know, it's Al's world. Even, you know, just looking at, like, I know you think the fight was interminable, but I thought the stoppage with Santa Cruz was funky, and you listen to Paulie Malignaggi kind of like take on it immediately after, and you can hear in his voice that he wants to say something, but he doesn't, and it's because it's the Heymanification of the sport, and everybody's being co-opted. What's going to be interesting in the next 2-3 years is to see when guys in top rank in Golden Boy keep looking over and seeing how much more money the Heyman guys are getting for how little work they're having to do, or even if they're just on NBC and grinding it out, like I think, if they'll let those contracts go out and move on over.
Here's a tweet from Patrick Hubble. If we get Mayweather-Cotto for the middleweight title, we need fans to start chanting Seven Nation Army to all the press conferences. Whew, okay. And here's one from William Smith. My question, aren't we giving Wilder credit for doing the same thing Klitschko does? Even Mauro calling Deontay Wilder's jab a telephone pole. Here's the difference, though. I thought Wilder, and again, I'm not saying he's better than Klitschko or he would beat him. I certainly don't think that's the case. But he did seem to take a few more chances, at least early on in the fight, than Dr. Steelhammer does. Am I wrong in that, Gabe?
No, I think that could be his undoing. It was almost his undoing in the Harold Conyers fight, is that Deontay wants to get it on. He realizes he's 6'6" and a half with an 83-inch reach, and he hits like, you know, an army. That he wants to get it on and detonate his missiles. And I thought it was a great fight for him. He hurt his hand in the fifth. You could see it. It was the fourth or fifth, but it looked like the fifth to me. And he was finding other ways to use his hand. And I think one of the biggest differences in the fight was that he had more weapons at his disposal. He could loop that right hand. He could do a rear uppercut from a long ways away because he's gigantic. It's not the best punch in the world to do, and if he doesn't do it right, he gets caught with the left hook like he did a few times. But he is finding out who he is and what he can do as a gigantic guy who also happens to be pretty coordinated as a, you know, to be a boxer. I think he's here to stay if they really match him right. It's just, you know, I have trouble believing in Al Heyman's matchmaking skills, but, you know, if ever he needed to develop and get it right, this is it.
Here's a final one before we hit the phone line from Maestro. Can we get Wilder versus Tyson Fury on this NBC time buy? I'll say it right now. Even though Alexander Povetkin is the number one rated guy in the WBC, I don't know if they're going to enforce it. We're going to see if Mauricio Sulaimán plays ball. And you know what I mean by playing ball with Heyman. But Tyson Fury is a weird, wild, wacky, tall, lanky guy that makes for fun fights. And I'll say this, if you could make Fury Wilder come to fruition within the next 6 months, I think that's one of the two or three really exciting, fun heavyweight fights that can currently be had.
You know, it is. I totally agree with you. And if I'm Wilder's people, I stay the hell away from it. The tall guy with some experience, he's got some power and durability. Sometimes he doesn't show up in the greatest of shape, but something tells me Fury would bring the Fury. I would go after Alexander Povetkin. He's shorter. He can be plodding. He will stay on the outside. I know he's got the pedigree, but I just think his arrival, and he's been dead on arrival as a heavyweight. I mean, he's high ranked, but I think it's a style that even though he's a southpaw, right, he kind of plays a little bit into what Wilder does well. I think that's a better fight, and I think it's actually a potential knockout after some nice boxing by Wilder. I don't know. It's just a wild guess.
347-215-7598. Steve K9 Kim, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. We are here for another hour. This is the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
And just a correction, Povetkin's a right-hander. I was thinking of Matt Korobov because they're both plotting Euros. His careers didn't pan out. In the 503, you're live on the next round. 503.
Hi, guys. It's Alex. Hi, guys. It's Alex Morgan. I said
What's up, man? Two questions.
What's next? Pretty much what's next for two fighters? What's next for Lucas Matisse and what's next for Alvarez?
Well, Saul Alvarez, I detailed in my column last night, or actually yesterday, I believe that a couple of weeks ago, I've been told this, that they reached out to James Kirkland because they were getting very, very antsy over Miguel Cotto not putting his name on the dotted line. Now, I've been told by sources on both sides that the blame, if you want to assign any, for this fight not coming to fruition is squarely on Miguel Cotto, perhaps because he understood that Mayweather-Pacquiao was always going to be a bit of a tight pipe dream. Now, as it relates to the machine, there are early reports, and I've talked to both sides, and they say they are willing to do it. Get this, guys. Lucas Matisse against Ruslan Provodnikov. Sign me up.
Yes. Doug Fisher, you know, boxing's in trouble when, like, you know, one of the top editors at Ring Magazine says, you know, I wasn't planning on flying to many fights because they're not very many good ones. You know, I think he would head out to this one. I think myself, I think I would head out to this one. That fight is as good as it gets right there. All action, somebody's getting knocked out.
Anything else we can do for you?
No, that's it. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
718. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Good. Who is this?
Pedro from the Bronx.
Pedro.
What's up?
Welcome to the next round.
I want to say fuck Steven Espinoza for his fake smug facade. Like, he's on mission. He knows everything. Bullshit. Oh, the sport. Oh, let's do competing dual dates. Let's announce this fight only with a month left and not promote it. Yes, betterment of the sport.
Pedro, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you are a boxing fan, given the fact you're on with us right now. After this weekend, take away February 20th, which is a Showbox telecast. Showtime has nothing scheduled. I mean, literally nothing. Are you still keeping your Showtime subscription as of now?
Yeah, I watch TV shows on it. I watch Shameless, House of Lies, so I keep it for that as well. It's just not boxing purely, so.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone else that you want to excoriate, Pedro?
Oh, Dan Raphael. I didn't know he blocked me, faggot.
Okay.
If he was that sensitive about his weight, he won't be that fat.
Wow. Jeez. A lot of hostility there from the Bronx. Jeez.
The Cotto, I hope it fails epically, please. I'm going to promote radio links all over the place. I hope Anonymous takes over and, like, blasts that fight. Nobody asked for that.
Now, Pedro, hold on. I'm making an assumption, so I have to ask you. Are you Puerto Rican?
I'm not. I'm actually Dominican.
Okay, you're Dominican, but all right. Have you been a Miguel Cotto fan in the past?
Yes, I've been to a couple of fights at the Garden. So, yeah, I entered the one here in Yankee Stadium. So.
Okay, so.
I like the guy. I just don't want – nobody asked for this fight. He ruined the fight. It will help him and Mayweather ruin two fights he wanted to see. So this shit nobody asked for.
So I think you answered my question because I believe, Gabe, and maybe I'm just living in my own Twitter sphere, but I do have a pretty good amount of followers. I believe that this fight, Cotto Mayweather 2, I think there is a severe backlash. I really do. And if they're expecting this to do 1.5 million buys like I did back in 2012, Gabe, my guess is it would fall short of that number.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what everybody's saying now because they're mixing what they wanted with what they're getting, and they're mixing those two feelings. I think, one, I liked Cotto's plan the last time. I thought he did a really good job against Mayweather. I thought it was closer than the cards indicated. And now Miguel has rebuilt himself yet again with Freddie Roach. He's picked up, you know, okay, Martinez was nowhere near himself, but he's got that title. And it's about winnable fights, and I think – and it's also kind of chess, like long-term. If he loses to Mayweather again, he's already lost to him. He's still Miguel Cotto. If he doesn't get knocked down and he's competitive in the fight, things could be good for him. he still has the Canelo fight available to him. But if he fights Canelo and he loses, then the Mayweather rematch, what does he bring to it? Nothing. So I think he's playing a little chess with boxing fans' feelings and money and hearts.
Different. What would Golden Boy do on Top Rank? Did he spurn them once? They're like, oh, let's give him some more money. Oh, he earned it. No, he burned them. Why would they give him money again? And if he loses the Mayweather, what does he bring to the – he loses his title. What does he bring to the Canelo fight? And it's not his title. And he lost the Mayweather.
That is true. I mean, Gabe, I think the time to make this fight based on all the circumstances and the dynamic was May 2nd. I'm not so sure that if he loses that middleweight title, whatever that claim that is or how much that lineal title is worth to you or me, that is kind of the appeal of the fight. I don't think that fight gains value because he loses to Floyd again.
No, I don't disagree with you, and it's interesting, too, in that, I mean, that's very possible. That I still think a Cotto Canelo fight, people would watch it, depending, again, how he lost that belt to Floyd. I understand where people are coming from. I don't think it's a terrible fight. It's not the fight I want to see. I want to see Cotto Canelo. But, you know, I think the way he's looking at it is the way I laid out.
Pedro, before we let you go, anyone else you want to cuss out?
Remember, he was really hurt in the 12th round with an uppercut. I think he caught him with an uppercut, Mayweather. And he was really, really hurt.
No, he did, and then that's the other thing. And listen, I had it 8-4. I thought it was a good, solid, competitive prize fight. Maybe Freddie Roach brings an extra element, because let's face it, Freddie Roach is going to say, come forward, crowd this guy, and crank that left hook. And maybe it is a different fight. But at this stage, whether it's Pacquiao, Cotto, Mayweather, and I coined this phrase a couple of years ago, I don't want to see police academy. In other words, I want to start seeing some fresh matchups before these guys walk into the sunset. At this point, I don't even want to see Marquez Pacquiao 5. I've been there and done that. Let's see him fight Maidana or Matisse or Broner, anybody. But let's start seeing some fresh, new matchups. Cotto Canelo, to me, was as fresh as it got. Pedro, we got to get running, okay?
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, again, 347-215-7598. Gabe, go to the 931. We got a volunteer here screaming at me on Twitter.
Okay. Let's see. Where is he? Oh, there he is. 931, you're live on the next round.
Hey, keep calling Sing Rocket Top, people. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Mr. Tehran?
I'm still a bit nauseous from the Ohio State win, but I'm getting better. I'm feeling better. Thank you for asking. Well, I want to talk about the two cants in the sport that I was a fan of. First of all, the Puerto Rican, Miguel Cotto, and the Mexican, Leo Santa Cruz. I am so sick and tired of these. I was a big fan of Cruz guy, but this stuff got to stop. You know, and about Miguel Cotto, Pacquiao, Mayweather, I want to retire. They're holding up the sport hostage. And I'm done. You know what I'm saying? This is the first time a Puerto Rican, like, I agree 100% with Mr. Canelo for the first time ever, which is, wow. You know, never had a Puerto Rican rant from a Mexican and vice versa.
Ooh, that's very un-WEPA. Here's the biggest frustration that I have with Leo Santa Cruz, Teto Moto, a very nice young man. Okay? He's not that delusional guy like Quillen or Berto. So he's not like that guy that maddens everybody being a Al Haymon client. And the guy's done a lot for his family, so I don't even begrudge him naming his son after him, okay? What is bothersome to me is when he starts saying stuff like, I will fight Rigondeaux, and then 2 weeks later saying, well, he's kind of boring. And then he flip-flops again by saying, yeah, I'll fight Rigondeaux for $3 million. As Aretha Franklin once said, who's zooming who? You don't want the guy. That's fine. But the intramurals have got to stop.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want somebody to say something and mean it. You kind of lose the public a little bit like that. And I don't know. I do wonder about the salaries of Al Haymon and the way Roc Nation is retaliated by raising that price. That in a few years, are we going to be – is that where the salaries are going? Is that also part of Al's plan?
Well, hold on, Gabe. Literally, Roc Nation, when it comes to Al Heyman clients, or should I say cult members of the Branch Davidians of Waco slash Heyman, they literally can't give their money away. I mean, it was reported in TMZ that three more Al Heyman fighters turned away lucrative offers for Roc Nation. I don't know what that says, but I think it's very interesting. Now, Eduardo, I know that you didn't have Miguel Cotto somehow in your top five Mount Rushmore of all-time Puerto Rican fighters. Based on what he's done, is he now out of your top 20?
No. I got to give the man credit. I got to give the man respect, but he's definitely not on the Mount Rushmore. He doesn't deserve it. Only real men are on the Mount Rushmore.
Whoa.
In my joke.
Eduardo, anything else?
Not enough room for him and Brian?
I'm sorry. I'll be nice.
Hey, I live in San Francisco.
However,
it's all love. Go ahead.
You know, Wilder, you know, you made a good point with that. I was a huge Lennox Lewis fan. Huge. And I never didn't think about it that way, but don't you think it's too soon to be crowning him yet? I mean, yeah, he's
Well, nobody's
young,
crowning
grown.
Him. Eduardo, we know what he is. He beat a guy in Stavern that had a pretty good foundation, but who still lost to Demetrius King, I believe, and was struggling mightily on HBO against Ray Austin and had fought one time the past 3 years, two of them against Chris Areola. So nobody is saying that he beat Jimmy Young or Ron Lyle or Ernie Shavers here. We're just saying that he took a step up, he was tested, and he passed. That's it.
Not true. True. This is why I listen to this show and not other shows, because you got to deal with a little boxing accountants, a.k.a. Haymanites, and people who are so delusional. I can't stand it. But, hey,
Haymanites,
guys,
that's a
best.
Cult.
Hey, you guys are the
I
best,
love that,
guys.
Haymanites. I only refer to him as Lennox Lewis because just the style. I think he's going to have to find his inner Lennox Lewis a little more than his inner Holyfield, which I think is more his nature, to throw a lot of punches and really go after the guy. He's now learning how to change speeds and to win a fight with just a jab because it's an 83 inches long, that reach. So that's all I meant. You know, I think he's actually already kind of being more exciting and it kind of holds more excitement for me than Lennox Lewis ever did, you know?
I could dig it.
Hey,
guys,
Eduardo.
Thank you for this time, man. You guys are the best.
Thank you. Here's a tweet from Mike I. He says, do you think Petey Petrov did the right thing by walking away from Hank Lundy, who missed weight? We didn't mention this earlier, but it was a buzzkill. Hank Lundy came in 4 pounds overweight, and what was a lightweight fight became no fight. Gabe, I don't think there's any doubt he did the right thing. I like Hank Lundy. He's a character. He's nutty. But when he says it's only 4 pounds, Gabe, that's basically a whole weight class. Okay? I don't know what choice Petrov did have, but to walk away from this event.
Well, and also, you know, apparently Petrov had seen him drinking water before the weigh-in, so he'd already given up. So here's a guy that already has an edge on you. What else has he done? You know, this is about trust and that both of you agree to a weight and to weigh that at the same time and kind of go through the same sacrifice of making that weight. You know, I think, no, he did the right thing. I mean, because you look at it, too, in terms of styles. And if Hank Lundy's right, even though he's taking on, like, short notice, like 10 days, if he's right, he's going to be a problem all night already for
mm-hmm.
Petrov's style. So now you're starting with a physical deficit. I'm good. I'll pass. And apparently,
and you know what?
First.
Hank Lundy's much bigger. He's fought as a pretty solid or decent welterweight. And I know people are going to say, yeah, but he took the fight on short notice. Right, but then negotiate a catch weight. Because I think Lundy's days at 35 are over. I think he is a good, solid, legitimately well-built 140-pounder. Let's take one more call before we preview the Boxing After Dark card that comes up on Saturday on HBO. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
619. You're live on the next round. 619.
Hey, how you doing, Gabe? How you doing, Steve? This is Juan from San Diego.
Juan, welcome aboard.
How you doing, guys? I have a couple of things I want to touch in. I'm very excited about what things are going with the Heyman thing and Wilder now being a champion. But one thing you asked Gabe, Steve, in the beginning of the show is if it was more of Wilder being good or Stavern being overweight or dehydrated. this is one of the things that just drives me nuts. The thing that happens in the ring during the fight is what matters. It doesn't matter if the guy has potential, if he looks better in a previous fight. What matters is what actually happens in the ring during the fight. The guy came dehydrated, that's his problem. Wilder did his job. He trained his ass off. He came into the ring prepared. Severn didn't. That's his problem. That makes him a lesser fighter in the ring. So we've all seen it, like when Maidana fought Floyd. Everybody said, okay, Floyd and Maidana, it's a mismatch. But what happens when they're in the ring? Things are different when you're in front of the guy. I don't know, but Severn might have just thought a little bit different when he saw this 6'7" monster in front of him. So a lot of things happen when you get in the ring with a guy. Don't you agree?
Juan, I think it's very simple. And Gabe, answer this question for me. Deontay Wilder can only prepare for himself, right? He can't actually train for Severn. Right? Am I wrong?
Exactly right. It's always been that. You know, you can only face the guy that's in front of you. And you know, that guy's job was to get in the best possible shape for you. You know, Deontay Wilder is potentially, he's now, you know, a heavyweight title holder. But he's, like, already a mountain to climb. I mean, I don't know what Severn was thinking. You know, but he didn't prepare. And it paid the price. You know, it's that Ali quote. Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion. Well, instead, he decided to go make it rain and get really fat and out of shape, and that's it.
Juan, you talk about what really matters is the night of the fight, those 36 minutes in between the ropes, and you're right. But there are many cases, and this may have been one of them, what you do a month before the fight, 2 months before the fight, or for 6 months before the fight, when you don't do much in terms of actually being a professional athlete who's conscientious about his training, that can lead to a defeat. Training camps can win or lose fights. And I have no sympathy for a guy like Severn who understands or has to understand. I'm 36-year-old. I have Don King, who's basically a line-in winner. Without this belt, I'm going back to a line that makes the DMV look short. This is on him.
What I'm saying is that to answer that question, it's how good Wilder is, because Severn is not a dedicated guy. That's the fact. He demonstrated in the ring. He did not prepare himself. That's his problem. That makes him a lesser fighter to me, at least. The other thing I want to touch on is the whole Al Haymon and Floyd Mayweather, all those things that are happening around those guys. You know, like, I'm not a big Canelo fan. I don't think he's such a good fighter. But you know what? That guy wants to fight the best. That's the only thing that he wants to do. Cotto, Floyd, those guys are just looking to put money in their pockets. They think they deserve things. This is a sport, man. They need to fight the best. And I'm tired of those guys. I was very excited at the beginning of this year, thinking that maybe we would be getting Floyd versus Statham. But now we're not getting it, because guess what? Cotto is just putting his nose in the middle of that fight. And Floyd is just trying to make another. Okay. Let's get the fight. We're starting out a good first step with a Danny Peterson fight. The Broner Molina fight sounds like a good fight. I'm all for that, but damn, those guys, they just don't want to get in the ring with the best. What's wrong with them?
Juan, thank you for the call. You have been heard. And Gabe, it's very simple. If you are a fan and are disappointed, speak with your wallet. I believe that's the biggest, loudest statement that can be made. We'll take your calls in a few more minutes. Again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, from Denver, Colorado, or one of the suburbs, the First Bank Center, Brandon Rios, Mike Alvarado 3. I think in professional wrestling, they would call this loser goes home. Bottom line, the winner is still relevant, earns another payday or two at the top level. I think the guy who comes out defeated, if it's not a great fight, I think becomes a big-name stepping stone.
Yeah, I think he gets another shot to make a nice payday and kind of just stay relevant. Like, you know, Brandon Rios said on the, you know, the show advertising at the Road to Rios Alvarado 3, that he knows that this is, it's go time. You know, he has, if he wants to stay relevant, he's got to do this. He's got to win this fight. And I think both guys understand it, which makes it a very compelling matchup. You know, they're both – one thing that was kind of weird, they didn't mention Alvarado had lost to Marquez. They kind of seemed to exercise
yeah.
it and said focus on his jail time, which, you know, you could count as a little bit of a loss. It's a hard fight to pick, man, because you just wonder – Rios did not look good in the Manny Pacquiao fight. He looked, you know, either like he was completely outclassed or a bit of a spent bullet. And, you know, the Chavez fight didn't show me much more that said, oh, this guy's got a new way of doing things and he's really rededicated. But the Alvarado getting picked up at 4 in the morning with a gun in the car, his or not, what are you doing partying, hanging out with a guy at 4 in the morning? Maybe he was driving to training camp, but he didn't say that. So I have to kind of lean towards Rios in this fight just because he's got this fire in him. He does love to train, even if a lot of that just includes sparring. I tend to think that Brandon's going to bring it one last time in this fight. So I'm kind of leaning with him, but it's anybody's game.
I am going with Bam Bam Rios, and it's just really a hunch, and I believe one of the key moves they made, remember, this fight is in the Mile High City or the Mile High region. Altitude is going to be an issue, and instead of going the traditional 7 to 10 days to acclimate yourself to those conditions, Robert Garcia and Rios, they went a full 2-3 weeks early. I think that is going to be a key factor here, especially as they grind on each other over 10 rounds. I think this is still going to be another good fight. Listen, certain guys, whether it's Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti, or at a higher level, Barrero Morales, it's what I call peanut butter and jelly. They are just made for each other, and you get the sense maybe they can't be that competitive or exciting anymore against anybody else. But against each other, it is simply a perfect fit. Gabe, are you a believer in Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I certainly think he's got something real to offer. You know, I want to see him get challenged a little bit more, you know, is the thing. And I think in this fight, we're going to see something more. You know, and Vlasov, you know, Maxim Vlasov, I think he's going to bring some technique. I think he's going to bring some experience and certainly some pressure and some power to the table. I mean, he's only got 15 knockouts and 31 wins or 31 fights against one loss, you know, 30 wins. But I think he's a strong dude, and it's going to bring out the best in this kid because I think that's what it's about now for Gilberto Ramirez Sanchez. He's got to be tested. He's going to be pushed more rounds, more experienced opposition. So we can find out just how real his power is. But I really like his style quite a bit.
Gabe, early on, this is the classic Top Rank matchmaking, and I think they're as good as anyone that's ever done it at developing and nurturing young fighters to their maximum potential. Early on, it went from hitting the soft toss to the batting tee to batting practice. Now, starting from this fight on, I think he's going to actually phase some live pitching. So I think this weekend will be interesting to see just what kind of stuff this guy really has. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. That number, 347-215-7598. This is Steve Kim, Gabriel Montoya on the next round. On the Leave It in the Ring radio network, we are here for another 37 minutes. Gabe?
In the 585, you're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, guys, it's Jake from State Farm.
Jake, how you doing? How the khakis looking? Are they all ironed up and everything with the pleats?
Well, they're kind of they're wet at the bottom because it's like 2 degrees out here. And
you yikes. Yikes.
It smells like, yeah, it is. It smells like suicide here, for sure.
So what's going on, Jake?
Well, I got kind of two comments. One is related to the Floyd-Miguel Cotto. I don't think either fighter really... But I don't think it matters much to Miguel Cotto, I guess. But Floyd Mayweather is going to get – this isn't going to be like some turbulent sea squalls, you know. This is going to be like a tsunami-level backlash if he fights Miguel Cotto. Even his most ardent defenders won't be able to defend this move. I mean, this is – Stephen A. Smith is going to be on First Take talking about how he's – He officially says that he's ducking Pacquiao. This is going to get ugly for him. I don't really think he understands that.
But does he care, though? I mean, Gabe, do you think he cares? I mean, literally, as long as he cashes a big check for 8-9 figures on his way to billions, does he give a damn, in your opinion?
No. I mean, no, not at all. I mean, you know, if I was guaranteed $32 million to fight somebody, it didn't matter who it was. What do I care what people think about who that person ends up being, you know, who they want him to be? You know, it's all about looking at the landscape, what you can get away with, what the market will bear. I think Floyd's become a master of what the market will bear. And the consumers have themselves to blame for it. They keep buying these fights. And every time I hear the same thing from a different caller, this is going to be incredible backlash. It couldn't get worse than the first time, if you really think about it. I don't think even this time, as close as we got, that we had that perfect storm of everybody, like, and the brother asking about the fight. And
but you know what, Gabe, you know what I think the difference is? Back in 2010, and it was the hashtag that I invented, blame Bob. Everyone just assumed Bob Arum was a hindrance. This time around, I think Bob has finally turned around the PR battle after all these years.
No question. For me, I think if you've been paying attention, as we have, we stopped blaming Bob a long time ago. I mean, it goes back to, you know, what Joe Goosen told me at the Ten Goose years when the first negotiations fell apart. He's like, look, if you don't want to fight, you either create an obstacle that no one can get around, or you ask for, like, so much money that no one will pay it. You know, or you just, you know, that's basically it. And then Floyd just kind of priced himself out or created obstacles. It's just bottom line, he doesn't want it. For whatever reason, he doesn't want it. Either he's afraid, or he doesn't want to help, you know, Top Rank make a bunch of money off of Pacquiao. Whatever the hell it is, he doesn't want to risk letting this guy steal his legacy. Whatever it is, he don't want it. He just doesn't want it.
Jake, anything else?
Yeah, I'd like to add something about the whole Heyman TV deal and kind of what it means for boxing. You have this, you know, it's going to be an adrenaline boost to boxing for sure. You know, like the monster energy drink for the sport, I guess. You know, we're going to get good fights at first. You know, it's going to be on network TV, and it's going to seem great, and boxing's going to get more exposure. But, I mean, at what cost, really? I mean, boxing is going to become further fractured. We're going to see pretty much two different universes, as Gabe said. But also, this Heyman takeover, I guess, is going to spur, you know, more effort by promoters. Competition makes, you know, everything better. And, you know, tonight De La Hoya tweets out on his Instagram, De La Hoya TV. You know, I'm assuming he's coming out with his own online streaming or something like that. So I see it as being both, you know, absolutely horrible and destructive on one hand, and, you know, potentially,
Jake,
you know, very good.
Jake, let me just say this, though. We are capitalists in the United States, and I'm not so sure what Heyman's doing is really capitalism or just collusion. I'm all for competition, that fighters don't have to be with a certain promoter or advisor to be on TV or get certain fights. But unfortunately, we do not live in a perfect world.
No, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that you're right, and that competition breeds better fights, you know. And I got to applaud them that they did come at least with some sort of drug testing. I still want to know if the commissions are involved, and the you know, the golden question: what happens if somebody tests positive for a drug before the fight? Do we cancel it? Do we let them fight? Then if we do let them fight, why are we, you know, even testing? And I'd like the Cleveland Clinic thing, that they're going to have all their fighters examined by the Cleveland Clinic. I mean, Top Rank's been doing that for a while with some of their fighters. It's nice to see that catching on, because I think promoters do, contrary to what Kathy Duva believes, I think the promoters do have a bit of a responsibility to the safety of their fighters, and that includes TV testing and brains. But if this turns out to be like what 2014, where we're not getting good stuff as he's leveraging other business deals, and it's all at the whim of this one guy who's kind of controlling all the networks for whatever reason, I don't want any part of that boxing at all.
Mm. Jake, we got to get running, okay?
Thanks.
At 5 minutes past, we'll go through some news and notes. Here's a tweet from our old friend Robert Palmer. How does a Deontay Wilder defense sell at the Coleman Coliseum in Alabama? It holds 18,000. And would Frampton or Quigg take Leo Santa Cruz's zero? Gabe, I would love to see, and again, I just hope that the Heyman NBC model isn't just about the MGM Grand and other casinos, or even Barclays. You have a guy in Alabama, which is SEC country, Roll Tide, and it's such a novelty. I want to see them, and I'd be very curious to see if they could do their version of Terrence Crawford in Omaha with the guy that holds a portion of the heavyweight title. I think that'd be fascinating to see.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, it really needs to happen. That Al needs to learn to start developing guys as local draws as well as on TV, you know, and into pay-per-view guys that kind of just, you know, gouge the home audience. But, you know, there's like 2,000 people there. That was kind of sad. You know, it was a major event in sports history happening, in, you know, at this fight, and there was nobody there to see it, really. And there were probably most of them to talk.
No, they ended up having a pretty good crowd. A very small percentage of those were actually legitimately bought seats. And, Gabe, I'll say it right now, Frampton or Quigg, I'd favor both of them on a neutral, fair setting against Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just, it comes down to good fights. And you know, I'm curious, because we were talking about this, I'm curious about your opinion about the fights themselves that are being thrown out there. Guerrero, Thurman, you know, and Broner, Molina. Are they as good as people are treating them?
I think they're good fights, but I do believe, and a couple of people have brought this up, those are fights we should have seen on Showtime on a consistent basis last year. And maybe it's the boxing version of Pavlov's dog, and maybe I'm, you know, I need to study up on that a little bit more. But after getting Rod Salka, Danny Garcia, maybe these fights, which are in essence Salisbury steak, look like filet mignon.
That's what I'm saying. You know, everybody's really excited. Oh my God, he's back. We're back on NBC, and you know, Molina lost his last fight and was stopped. You know, and Broner actually looks good in his last fight, or better. You know, he had some moments where it was a tough fight. It was a good fight for him. There's not a lot to say that John's going to win. I mean, I like John. Every time I pick against him, he wins or does really well, like he did in the Matisse fight. But it's a kind of a showcase bout. I think Thurman Guerrero has some possibilities, you know, because Guerrero always comes to fight. He's a serviceable boxer. Thurman, I think, hasn't reached his ceiling yet, has a lot to learn. And I think he can learn quite a few things from trying to take out Robert Guerrero. He says he can get him in six. So, you know, it could be good, but I just, you know, it was sort of like when everybody declared Showtime the victor, right? And then Steven Espinoza was person of the year, and then they had the worst year in boxing, like, the next year. I think we go slow, and we don't crown anybody yet.
Here's a tweet from Robert Buffa II. How big of a hit is no Canelo Cotto to the 2015 boxing year? The tagline for Mayweather Cotto 2, money over glory. Gabe, there's no other way to say it. Not having Canelo Cotto, in my view, is a huge blow. That simple.
Yeah. I mean, it's, like you said, fresh matchups, you know, over sequels. You know, do you make something that's new and innovative and potentially classic? Or do you do Transformers 5? You know, it's just, to me, it's a no-brainer. You know, I just, but again, it, you know, now it's like, you know, the media is a certain line. We can basically kind of act as consumer affairs and say, look, this is not that great, or this is what it is. And if you buy it, you're encouraging bad behavior. You know, but it's up to the consumer. You know, the last line of defense. If you don't want to keep getting screwed like this, then, you know, stop taking the bad heroin and wait for the good stuff. Don't buy this fight and don't support it.
All right, let's take one call before we go to news and notes to TNR Royalty, our good friend Sean at 954, Gabe.
All right, actually, he was next. Nice. 954, you're live on the next round.
Steve, Gabe, what's going on, bud?
Good Tuesday to you.
So I'm sitting here just watching this Heat game. Feeling pretty good about this play. Anyway, guys, I wanted to talk to the most negative show in the business tonight because I'm feeling pretty negative. Does that sound okay? Okay, sound good?
Yeah, go for it. We're going to clear the lane. The stage is yours, Mr. Cherry 1551.
I'm so negative.
Okay.
Keep going.
Steve, I hope you've taken a look at my Twitter timeline, Steve, because I made it about like 6 years ago. And I only go on it to harass you about answering my phone calls.
Well, at least you have your priorities straight.
I look like one of those crazy people, but no,
yeah.
I don't ever go on there. So So, anyway, guys, I thought the Deontay fight was dog shit.
I thought it was
absolute dog shit. Listen, Heyman, he went from manager of the century to a magician because now I feel like he must have drugged Bermain Stiverne with some sort of tranquilizer. I don't know what the fuck is going on here, but but I think the way to beat Deontay is body shots all day long. And I hate to say it, but I think my boy Shannon Brave could get the job done.
Oh, God. You're not giving up on this, are you, Sean? You are persistent with Shannon the Cannon.
Let's go, Briggs. Let's go, champ. Anyway, so, guys, back to two more things here. I'm sorry for cursing, but Mayweather is the biggest pussy in the world. This isn't even about money. I don't even know what to say. It's like I don't even want to watch the sport. He. First of all, we all know he's a piece of shit person, plain and simple. And now the money excuse. You know what I mean? This isn't even about money. What is this shit? I want to kill him. If I saw him, I'd probably not do anything because he's got huge bodyguards. But what's
Sean?
But you know what
Sean,
I mean? Like, come on,
Sean.
Dude, what is this shit?
Sean, if Cotto Mayweather comes to fruition, would you at least watch it on the radio live?
I would just do what I always do. You guys know I'm a little bit of a gambling man. I would do what I always do, and I take Floyd by decision all day long, and you get it at probably -200, and that juice is worth the squeeze. So, and I just wouldn't watch the fight and just be happy I made money off it. But nah, he's terrible. I hate him. It gets me so fucking. Ugh.
I could tell.
How do you guys feel?
We're not fans of his either.
I feel like as a boxing fan, you know, watching Floyd do this dance to everybody, luring them in. I feel like I'm always watching one of his 12-round boring decisions, where it's like, you know, I probably could take the guy out, but I want to play it safe, one shot at a time. I'm going to tie him up. I'm going to move. I'm going to smile. And then I'm going to shake my head if I get near to being getting hit. Like, just all that frustration in all his fights. So I've kind of checked out from the, oh, my God, who is he going to fight next, you know, sweepstakes. I just don't – who gives a shit? Because it's not going to be the guy I want him to face. So who cares?
And truthfully, guys, I mean, if I'm Cotto in this rematch, I'd give him about 10 nut shots. I'd be dirty as fuck. I hope Cotto kills him. I really do.
I mean,
it's for the middleweight title. What a disgrace. Even Jose Suleiman is turning in his fucking grave. You know what I mean? This is crazy.
Wow. This is a very profane edition of the next.
Okay, I'm sorry.
For any kids out there, we want to apologize. Here's a question, though, and I just thought of this. If Cotto wears, again, his pair of MX Puncher's Everlast gloves, that's going to be an issue now, isn't it, guys? Given the fact he nixed Maidana's custom-made gloves? Huh.
Well, it's not a sport. It's a series of individual business transactions. So, you know, Cotto seems to be able to get it done with Floyd. So that, you know, that's the weirdest thing, is that you move from top rank, you know, from Canelo, from fighting Canelo and Golden Boy, you're moving away from top rank who has some political juice, who has your back because you have a relationship with Todd DeBuff, or I don't know what it's like now, but it just seems strange to go back to fighting with Floyd and have to fight all those battles for yourself again. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Hey, guys, thank you. I got a lot of that anger out. I'm chilling now. Don't worry. So,
right. Okay. I
got
to tell you, Gabe, we are a very therapeutic edition tonight. It's Therapeutic Tuesday here on the next round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim. Gabe, couple of notes here. I don't want to be that guy that says, I told you so, and start pointing fingers again and start throwing people under the bus. But, Gabe, Jermaine Taylor has gotten into more legal issues, and it's easy to make jokes. I don't even want to make jokes now. The guy is, like, doing crip walks at Martin Luther King Day parades. He's threatening to shoot little kids. There's just too many issues. His fight now with Sergio Mora has been postponed for February 6th. It's my opinion, and I'm not a doctor, but I play one on Blog Talk Radio. I think he is, in many respects, the boxing version of Junior Seau. In other words, he's that guy that has a lot of head trauma and an otherwise nice, well-adjusted human being. Because of that and the repeated blows, is simply not the same man he was before. Am I out of line for even having that opinion?
No, not at all. I mean, his behavior is giving you that opinion. You know, I think it's sad, and it's, you know, I don't like to play I told you so with somebody's health, but, you know, we've been pretty open about, hey, wait a minute, Lou, you said you didn't want to work with this guy, and now all of a sudden you're working with this guy, and you're telling us that, the clinic passed, you know, he passed with flying colors and everything's fine. But, you know, we'd all agreed before, at least the athletic commissions had, that a brain bleed and that's it, man. You know, that's the most delicate organ that you've got in your body. That doesn't work. You don't work. And we're letting this guy fight again. And, you know, personally, I got snapped at by Lou privately. And I didn't respond because I was like, let's just take a wait and see. I don't want to argue about this. And then something terrible happens to Jermaine and I feel even worse. But here we are. He's got, you know, gun issues. He seems to have some sort of, you know, behavioral control issue, sort of anger management issue. And that, there's a lot of research out there that says damage to the frontal lobe, which pretty much every boxer that grew up taking the jab to the forehead is going to have, is what, you know, damages impulse control. That whole thing controls right there, that whole impulse. So this is what Jermaine Taylor is exhibiting. He's got major concussions. You got a brain bleed. You got to put him on ice, and you got to really deal with the problem with compassion and help him through. But you know, the guy didn't need a title shot. He didn't need to be fighting anymore. And people allowed him to do this. And so you retweeted it. And, you know, people were starting to say, "Well, wait a minute, his friends and family, those people should be blamed." No, the people that got a title shot and got him back on the table, those people should be blamed. They should be ashamed of themselves.
He should have been put down after the Abraham fight. Gabe, I find it interesting. Carl Froch comes up with an elbow injury just as it really seemed like they weren't going to make the Chavez fight, okay, for March 28th. Bob Arum, once again the Bob Father, delivers with a classic line. He tells me, he hurt his elbow signing a non-existing contract. And then later in the day, in what was a very eventful Monday, Chavez signs to fight Andres Fonfara on April 18th. Now, you see the setup here. The Heyman side of the fence will have Chavez, and they've lined up Fonfara. You have Adonis Stevenson, and then he also signed Lucien Bute. And it seems like Eddie Hearn is really willing to play ball with Al Heyman, Gabe.
Well, yeah, I mean, you want the big fights and, you know, an entree into the U.S., I guess, you know, another market. Why not? It is, you know, if you can take the Al Heyman deal of kind of some front money and I'll borrow your promoter's license and we'll get on TV with this guy – you know, if you don't mind that hustle, then why not, you know, loan out a guy? You know, somebody was asking, do you think, you know, Fury will come over here or Wilder will go over there if that fight happens? And I don't think Fury has any problem traveling, coming on over. And I don't think Wilder will ever go over there again unless he has to. So I think, you know, it's that's the other thing. It's sort of like consumers buying pay-per-views. As long as the promoters keep allowing Al to just kind of use their guys and for a fee and use their promoter's license for a fee, well, then, you know, he doesn't need any – he's getting all the help he needs to circumvent the Ali Act, and it's a little frustrating to watch, but it is what it is. Mm.
We have about 15 minutes left. We got calls to go through, Gabe. Let's mow them down like dominoes.
All right. In the 805, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Nacho.
Nacho, welcome to the next round.
Thanks. I'm just calling to talk about some of the smaller guys. You guys touched on it earlier about Santa Cruz. So I was wondering, do you guys think that Frampton is just going to walk through Chris Avalos in his next fight coming up?
You know, Avalos is a tough, heavy-handed, muscular guy. But I do think Frampton is the real deal. I do believe, Nacho, he's a cut above Chris Avalos, yes.
Yeah, I think he's just going to stay low and tight, you know, and not get stupid with Avalos. Because Avalos can crack, and he's got an awkward style and delivery with his punches. So a guy like that, you know, you could get hit strange. You get hit on the ear, hit up high on the head, back of the head. So, but I think, like, I agree with Steve. He's just a cut above. I think Frampton mows him down in about 7 or 8 rounds.
Okay. And then the other question I had was the Japanese kid that blew out Omar Narvaez, I don't know how to say his name.
Inui.
Inui, yeah. Is it true that they're trying to line him up for Roman Gonzalez?
You know what? That's one of those fantasy fights all of boxing nerds would love. I'll be honest. I don't know if they'd make that fight. And Roman Gonzalez has just kind of gotten to 112, and Inui's at 115. So I'll be honest. Do I think that's realistically feasible for now? I would be on the side of no.
Yeah, he's just very young in his career. Why would you do that to him? You know, and it doesn't – yeah, like you said, the weights don't really make sense. I think that's just, you know, guys that make fake rankings talking about that.
Nacho, we got to get running, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Nacho, thank you very much. Join
right,
us again. We have 15 minutes, 347-215-7598. By the way, on Fox Sports 1, a very good scrap between Michael Perez and Miguel Costa. They went 10 rounds, and they're actually going through the decision right now. Gabe, who's next?
In the 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny,
hey, what's up, man?
Lenny, I saw your tweet yesterday regarding Deontay Wilder and Golden Boy. I was told by someone at Golden Boy they are no longer associated with Deontay Wilder, for the record.
Yeah, I think that was it's funny, that was what I was going to talk about. Dan Rafael actually did some journalistic work back a while back, and it looked like there was an out clause when they renegotiated the deal while Richard Schaefer was still with Golden Boy. I mean, that's about as shady as it gets.
that is Slim Shady, and that is no reference to Eminem either.
One of the other questions that I had was, is there any word on what the monetary settlement was between Heyman/Schaefer and Golden Boy? I know that they paid them handsomely. I think the rumors were floating around that it was 8 figures. I haven't heard anything else beyond that.
Again, this is just what I've heard. I've got none of this verified. I've heard anywhere. I've heard $10 million and I've heard $20 million. Someone told me that if you see a lot of the Golden Boy staff driving Bentleys, they can also thank Al Heyman.
That's great. Yeah, it's. I'm more excited to see how long Richard Schaefer will be out of the sport, and I'm very curious to put a footnote on it of how people will treat him. I mean, it's pretty clear what he did or what attempted to do. They paid money, so there's been a settlement, so they kind of agreed that did happen. How's the media going to treat him? Are they going to welcome him back with open arms and like, oh, our old friend who promoted some great fights, and the fights, they'll forgive him because he put on some great fights? Or are they going to, you know, trust him? I mean, should he be trusted to come back into the sport after pulling something like that?
I mean, I don't think Richard Schaefer's ever really left. I think the Engelbrecht fights that they do down in Orange County, he was there without Heyman in early December. They're hanging out, watching some of the Al Heyman guys that Al Heyman's looking to sign, and they're sitting there in the suites in the high rent district. Freely hanging out at these. They're not televised events, but I mean they're there at smaller events. Schaefer's out and about. He's not hiding.
Well, Schaefer was there this past weekend at the MGM Grand. So, listen, he may be gone, may not be gone forever.
I had another question for you guys too. I don't know. So is it just a foregone conclusion that Mayweather and Pacquiao is done, or are their sources saying that it's done, or are we just kind of reading the writing on the wall?
Well, I don't think you need to be able to, decipher hieroglyphics to kind of figure out that it's not looking good. And I've become a realist who's turned into a cynic as it relates to this fight, and I've had very good sources tell me, and they could be wrong also, that Mayweather Cotto 2 is a fait accompli. So there you have it.
Yeah.
There you have it. Yay.
Lenny, we got to get running, okay?
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, man. Thanks.
Gabe, who's next? We got about 10 minutes to go here.
All right. In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Yo, it's Carl.
Carl,
what's going on? Hey, what's up, fellas? Hey, did they say the frequency with these NBC cards? Is it once a month, every other month, or what exactly are they doing?
There's 20 shows, so they will be more than once a month. 4 of them are in prime time. 5 of them are in the afternoon. I think the other 11 will be on NBC Sports Network. As for the exact schedule beyond April 11th, that much has not been announced.
Okay. With that April 11th card, did you hear anything about them finalizing Quillen and Andy Lee. You hear anything about that? I was reading something about that.
Told that there is some rumblings. I think that is a possibility, although there's two issues here. Andy Lee may want to make a first obligatory title defense in Dublin, Ireland. Also, you have to take care of Frank Warren, who promotes the number one contender in the WBO, Billy Joe Saunders. So those issues still have to be cleared.
Oh, man. Alan, make it happen, man.
The Almighty. The Almighty.
Al will make it happen, man. And with that, you know, that Wilder-Stiverne fight, man, Wilder just, he kept that stick on his ass, man. Wasn't quite Larry Holmes, man, but that stick, man, was everything, man.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
You know what? One guy wasn't in shape, and people kept saying that Stiverne was slow and lethargic and that he couldn't cut off the ring. Well, guys, that's what happens when you're not in shape.
Hey, man, even if he was in shape, man, that stick, man, that's all I got to say, man, that stick. It wouldn't matter if he was in shape or not, man, because, you know, Stiverne, he was going to have to sell out, man, and that's just not how he fights. You know what I mean? He's a counterpuncher, man. You know,
no,
I don't think it mattered.
and again, I go back to this point. He was still struggling with the very old Ray Austin a couple years ago, and he also lost to Demetrius King. So maybe he just matched up really good his hand speed and the size with Chris Areola, but that's a short squat guy compared to this long, lean, muscular, athletic Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. How do you think Jennings was fair against Wilder? I heard him talking shit on YouTube.
I think Jennings is still more of an athlete, and quite frankly, I don't like the fact he hasn't been very active, Gabe, the last 18 to 24 months.
He would get that stick put on his ass too, man.
I think if you're not fighting actively, you know, the Klitschko fight was a tough one to get. And I think it was also kind of far away, and people felt like they didn't have a chance. I think if Deontay Wilder's reign in the United States and the opportunity that provides doesn't light a fire under every big man in the sport, that you know, particularly the ones over here, then they just got no business being in the business. Jennings should be getting ready to fight, should be freaking active. He's wasted all this developmental time just sitting around watching. I have no idea why, you know. But I think so. I think you're right. He gets the stick put on him too.
Carl, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, it's all good, man. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Right. Gabe, I understand we have a few more calls left. Let's roll through them.
All right. 602, you're live on the next round. 602. 602?
Oh, it's a late knockdown. Oh, we stayed on our feet for 82 minutes there. Oof.
It was so close.
Jeez.
In the 716. You're live on the next round. 716. Wow.
No dice. Now got knocked down again.
This is terrible. All right. In the 203, you're live on the next round. 203.
Hi, yeah. I have a question. So I saw an article today, you know, regarding Pascal Kovalev. And I guess Pascal wants to sort of like a random drug testing. And Kovalev, like his coach, his manager said, they'll do it, but they're not going to pay for it. I think that's, I don't know, like disingenuous. I don't know. I think, you know, if they want to prove, especially a guy like Kovalev with so many knockouts, you know, I think he is one of the guys who should be at the forefront. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? The other question, has Pascal been tested for any, has he ever underwent random testing? I know he had an issue with Bernard Hopkins and, you know, or, you know, Kovalev, have either guy been randomly tested? And when I say I mean, like VADA, like something in an organization like VADA.
Well, Pascal, in order to fight Butte, had to undergo, had to enroll in a drug testing program as a part of putting together. And I don't know. I've heard from different people that have gone through the program because I called it the Jim Innerbox protocol, and you can look it up. I did an interview on Bloody Elbow about it. To me, hopefully, if they did everything that I asked, it's a good program. What I'm hearing from some of the people is that they only test them like twice in camp, and they're not really releasing the results. I think there's more of a monetary fine in place as opposed to canceling the whole fight. And that seems to be what Pascal wants. And I tend to think that he wants that because that's what they've experienced in terms of, you know, agreeing to all the terms, not that he tested positive, but that he's kind of referring to the program that I laid out. But I don't know why they're not doing that Jim Innerbox protocol, maybe because he's no longer with those guys and he's on his own. I know his guy doesn't want VADA testing. That's one of my sources told me that, his guy Memo Heredia. I just think it's hard to say. You know, I was talking to somebody today in that industry and saying this thing is kind of fighter-driven, that the fighters really need to ask for it. But I think at some point, you know, now that it's just such an issue on the table, I think the Association of Ringside Physicians, I think the ABC, you know, all the commissions need to get together and really start talking about how they're going to do this uniformly. Because, you know, it's been like 4 years since Floyd asked about it. And we're just running into all these cases and even counting, you know, the UFC or MMA, things have gone wrong. Some things have gone right. I just think it's something that really needs to be put on the table and solved. Because this is, you know, this is just messy. It's just too messy, and it's not getting done.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks so much.
All right, we have about 4 minutes left. Gabe, anyone else remaining on the phone lines here?
Yeah, the 319, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Warren Wortham, Dub again.
What's up,
Warren? What's going on?
Hey, not too much. Hope you guys are having a great evening. Hey, one thing I noticed about Jermaine Taylor's recent behavior, it reminds me so much of Riddick Bowe's behavior at the end there.
No, there's no doubt. Listen, I'm not a doctor, but Warren, I could have told you before all this, that old saying that you hear on TV shows, that boy ain't right. Right, Warren? I mean, I don't need to be Marcus Welby. I don't need to be Dr. Doolittle. Warren, you're a guy, I've read some of your stuff on social media, you're a wise man. You could just look at a guy and go, that guy is crazy, deranged, as Martin Lawrence once said.
Exactly. And then it's kind of funny, you remember last week I brought up that I thought Floyd might pull that switcheroo at the 11th hour. It looks like he's about to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And are you surprised, though?
Nah, not at all. Because I think Floyd's going to wrap up the career. He's going to do that fight with Cotto. And then he's going to say, hey, you know, Anthony Mundine went against the odds and beat, I forgot the guy's name that he was supposed to lose against. And so he deserves a shot, too. And he's going to call it a day after that.
Guys, I got a message here from a good source that texted me that Canelo against Kirkland May 2nd Alamo Dome is a done deal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is Kirkland going to be ready for that, though? Is he going to be up to it?
Is he even going to show up? I mean, let's make an assumption. Will he at least come to the press conference?
Exactly. In that heavyweight division, Steve USS Cunningham would fare against Wilder?
Cunningham against Wilder? You know what's funny? Listen, I love Steve Cunningham. I think he's one of the true gentlemen in the sport. Great power against a shaky chin. I think USS Cunningham would get sunk. I hate to say it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for taking my call, Gabe and Steve. I sure love this show. I look forward to it every week. So continue keeping up the fantastic work.
Thank you very much, as always. Gabe, Canelo, Kirkland. It's obvious the Cotto fight, they're not going to even like try to like resuscitate it. Thumbs up or thumbs down on that matchup?
Oh, thumbs up. I think he needed this fight a long time ago, and depending on where the weight is, you know, I still like James's chances if he shows up in shape. So thumbs up on it. And just a quick programming note before you take us out. This Thursday, Dave's been on the road, but we are going to have a live episode of Leave It in the Ring, I believe, at 5 p.m., but I'll just check my Twitter feed, and I should have more information shortly. So there you go.
All right, I got some work to do here. I got some phone calls to make on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network. This is Steve Kim saying till the next round. Goodbye, everybody.